The control sphere was a cylinder of the same diameter, which held the freight bay from which they had just come. Beyond that was a long, thin spine, studded with regularly spaced modules like immense dinosaur vertebrae. At the very end of the spine was the propulsion system, the intricate and fearsome engines which had once burned to accelerate the ship up to its present cruising speed, and which would burn again on some immeasurably remote day when Sky was full-grown. Sky knew all these aspects of the ship. He had seen models and holograms of it many times. But it was something else to be seeing it for himself, from outside, for the first time. Slowly, but with grinding stateliness, the whole ship was rotating on its long axis, spinning to create the illusion of gravity on its curving decks. Sky watched it turn. Watched lights hove into view and disappear 10 seconds later. He could see the tiny aperture in the cargo cylinder where the taxi had departed. It looked very small, but not perhaps as small as it should have done, given that this ship was all his world could ever be, almost. He was young now, and he had only been allowed to explore a small fraction of the Santiago, but surely it would not be long before he knew it all, intimately. He noticed something else, too, something that the models and the hollows had definitely not got right. As the ship turned, it looked darker on one side than the other. What could that mean? But almost as soon as the troubling inconsistency had begun to worry him, he had forgotten it, marveling in the sheer immensity of the ship, the pin-sharp way the details held their clarity across kilometers of vacuum. Trying to imagine where his favorite places in the ship mapped into this strange new view, he had never been very far down the spine, that was for certain, and even then only under Constanza's guidance, some daredevil adventure before the adults caught them. No one had really blamed him for that, however. It was natural curiosity to want to see the dead, once their existence was known. Of course, they were not really dead, just frozen. The spine was a kilometer long, half the ship's total length. In cross-section, it had a hexagonal form, with 6 long narrow sides. Along each of those sides were spaced 16 sleeper modules. Each a disc-shaped structure rooted to the spine by umbilical attachments, 96 discs in total, and each of those discs, Sky knew, contained 10 triangular compartments, each of which held a single Momio sleeper and the bulky machines necessary for their care. 960 frozen passengers, then, nearly 1,000 people in total, all submerged in an icy sleep which would last the entire duration of the voyage to Swan. The sleepers, needless to say, were the most precious commodity that the ship carried, its sole reason for existence. The 150-strong living crew were there only to ensure the well-being of the frozen and to keep the ship on course. Again, Sky measured his current familiarity with the ship against that which he could reasonably hope to attain by the time he was an adult. At the moment he knew fewer than 12 people, but that was only because his upbringing had been deliberately sheltered. Soon he would know many of the others. His father said that there were 150 warm humans on the ship, because that was some kind of magic number in sociological terms. The population size towards which village communities tended to converge, and which carried with it the best prospects for internal harmony and general well-being amongst its members. It was large enough to allow individuals to move in slightly different circles if they wished, but not so large that there were likely to be dangerous internal schisms. In that sense, Old Man Balcazar was the tribal leader, and Titus Houseman, with his deep knowledge of secret law and his abiding concern for the safety of the population, chief medicine man, or top hunter, perhaps. Either way,